HD 2 and 3, KPFT, Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender community. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Valinsky.
And Jennifer Renee.
Brian Lavinka.
Daniel Williams.
And Glenn Holt. And tonight on Queer Voices, our very own Jennifer Renee Poole will be leaving us. Big pouty face. But not going far. If you follow the program, you know that she's running for city council. And that means that her participation in the radio show has to be limited. We'll talk with her about that and what's coming up next in her life. In news wrap, lawyers for and against California's Proposition 8 have been fighting in a U.S. district court over the release of videotapes of last year's trial. In that trial, the court found Prop 8 to be unconstitutional. In the federal court case against gay former U.S. Army Lieutenant Dan Choi, the judge has decided to allow the defense to present evidence of, quote, vindictive prosecution by the government. Choi is on trial for failing to unchain himself from the White House fence in a protest of Don't Ask, Don't Tell last November. And tacky photos of his derriere on a website for gay sex seekers has come back to bite an anti-gay Puerto Rican Republican senator. Guess where? In his derriere. And after news wrap, we'll be talking to, and I hope I get this right, Audre Plobet, president of Gamma Rho Lambda chapter of the University of Houston. Gamma Rho Lambda is the first national college-based LGBT sorority, which is not exclusive to women of a particular race or sexual orientation, and their fall rush starts tomorrow. In our second hour, we will be talking on the phone with Wayne Beeson, the founder of Truth Wins Out. He will be coming to Houston this week to lead the response to a conference being held here next weekend by Exodus International. That's the so-called ex-gay group. MCCR Houston is also ramping up to respond to the Exodus conference, and we'll have the Reverend Mark Eggleston joining us in the studio as well. In the feature segment from This Way Out, Mark Bingham, a passenger aboard United Flight 93, is one of the few openly acknowledged GLBT heroes of 9/11. The documentary, With You, explores Bingham's life and his relationship with his mother, Alice Hoagland, a former United Airlines flight attendant. This Way Out has an extended interview with Alice Hoagland about her son. And, Jack, maybe there's some other stuff, too?
Well, I think that's a pretty full show for a holiday. And this is sort of the end of summer holiday, you know.
And I'm just getting older. Is it dark in here?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it is. It's getting darker now. It's getting toward the fall solstice.
Then your lights are out.
It's the fog of age.
Yes. Happy Labor Day, everyone.
Well, and I also want to congratulate Kroger's for redoing their store. They had a grand opening, a re-grand opening. I think this is probably the fifth time they redone their store. But
it is Disco-licious. I went in there.
Well, you know, it's really interesting because in our office, we actually got an invite to that ribbon cutting. And, we wrote up a little thing about it. And I was wondering whether we should actually officially say Disco Kroger. Well, their press release refers to them as Disco Kroger. So they're owning up to it. So... I have to give them credit for that.
It is very nice on the inside.
I was there today, and it is fabulous. Yeah. It lives up to the Disco Kroger.
Yes, so there's even a little, like, a luncheon. There's a section to sit down on the mezzanine level.
A mezzanine, yeah.
Yes. So, good. I'm glad that they're redoing this one because they've got a lot of competition.
Coming
into the area. So.
And, you know, the gays are picky when it comes to grocery stores.
Yeah, because we've got an HEB opening and there's a Whole Foods opening. Yeah. And meanwhile, there are still no grocery stores in the Third Ward. But I guess that's another issue.
You need to mention that one.
Of course.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of need to mention, is the website back up yet?
No, I've been concentrating on something else that I'm working on, so I will work on that as soon as I can.
Okay, well, Summer is here, and she will be tweeting away on our Twitter site. You can follow us there.
Yep, say hello.
Oh, hi, everyone. Summer, I'm in here.
Yeah? Nope. Okay.
Okay, let's take a little break.
Okay.
You're either gonna love or gonna hate. It's just the way, it's just the way you live your life. Behind the wall, you live your life afraid to fall, afraid to fall. I should have unleashed myself from you the minute that I stopped getting through. I should have. Small stuff makes you sweat. It's your way, it's your way. The past is hard to leave behind when you're the one that robbed love blind and I'm the one.
Is Queer Voices.
And this is Brian Levinka.
And Jennifer Renee Poole.
And Daniel Williams.
And tonight is...
That's right.
A bittersweet...
I'm being the interviewee.
Yes, you cannot... Yes, just sit there. Tonight is a bittersweet moment because we are saying adieu, not goodbye, to friend and co-host Jennifer Renee Poole.
Yeah.
Adieu is the one that means goodbye. You mean au revoir.
Well,
au revoir.
I mean, okay. I don't mean to say so long, never see you
until
again.
Until you hear me again.
Yes,
is really
exactly.
What, on the radio right here again.
Yes, and this is your sixth?
6 years. I did the whole thing to figure it out. I was an intern here 6 years ago this month.
6 years ago.
So, and then in October, I went on the air as co-host.
And so.
Most amazing thing. Just to come in to be an intern. Oh, you already know that. Oh, you know that too. That's how we get our own air people.
Why are you leaving specifically?
Oh, well, tomorrow morning I will be filing the paperwork to put my name on the ballot for Houston City Council at large position 2. Mm-hmm. And there's in the bylaws of KPFT, if you are a candidate for office, you can't be an on-air personality. And so tomorrow I'll become officially on the ballot. So therefore, I've got to step away from the microphone.
So you're official tomorrow, and that's
official tomorrow. So tonight, this is the last show till Monday, December 14th.
I got you.
And I'll be back. I'm not going anywhere. Hey, look, when I came on the show and the first time as a co-host, and if y'all have listened to the show enough, we go through the series of people, and you know, there was the last one. I was always last in those first years, and I always said, this is Jennifer Renee, and the T is no longer silent. Because at that point in time, there wasn't anyone on radio air anywhere in the United States at that particular moment.
Really?
That was transgender. There was some internet
who was
radio
out.
That was, yes, out transgendered. And so this was an opportunity to really have the transgender community have a voice. And that's not to say that a G or an L person or a B person couldn't represent the issues around transgender, but I bring a certain passion to it because it's personal to me. And
absolutely.
The issues were personal. And I remember when the debacle around INDA and HRC was threw the trannies under the bus. You know, we went on and on. And if y'all remember correctly, I was able to get Joe Solomonese on the radio.
Remember that interview.
And over the last 6 years, I got Barney Frank on. And
I was going to ask you, what has been in 6 years your favorite interview or most memorable?
Most memorable interview. They all seem to run together. You have to understand, all of you, you know, this is a volunteer thing, and it is a passion. You don't come up here every Monday, and I probably haven't missed, a dozen Monday nights over 6 years, and it's because I love it.
It's
wonderful to come here because it gives us an opportunity to bring to the community issues that may or may not be on the front page. Definitely not on the front page, and we've lost community newspapers. So Queer Voices is sort of the source on a weekly basis of what's going on in our community, because we have our guests on, and then we have This Way Out for national stuff. But it's a little bittersweet moment for me. It really is, because I have enjoyed coming here every Monday night.
Well, I've just started as a host of the show about a month ago, so I would very much appreciate some advice from you, pulling from your 6 years of experience, on do's and don'ts. What's the worst mistake you've ever made during an interview?
Silence, dead air is better than just in yourself, because you're dead. And I know that that's silly, but what happens is, when someone is talking, be prepared for the next question.
You have to be a couple of seconds ahead.
You have to be a couple of seconds ahead. And that was what has developed over the last year or so with Brian, is that when he and I do an interview, we double-team the guests so that it keeps rolling.
It's
so I'm not having to think of everything. I usually, whoever's prepared, we prepare it in front of us for questions and to go on.
And what's the best question you've ever asked a guest?
Mm-hmm. Oh, let's see, the best question
I
ever...
on the spot.
It was Barney Frank, and asked him if he really said that transgender, there were no such thing as transgenders, they were just gay men in dresses.
Oh.
Ooh, what was his response?
He said he never said that. But I had the quote, and I was able to quote where it was printed that he said it. But that was the most fun. And I've had a lot of good times on here. What is good, you know, when you ask me which is the best question, when I've got friends out there that will send me emails or text me after the show, and they'll say, "Boy, that was a good interview. I got a lot of good information out of it." Then I've done my job. It's a matter of making sure that the interview is informative and gives the people the information they need. That's what's been the greatest reward.
Informative and, we hope, entertaining.
And entertaining, yes.
We want you to listen. We don't want, to tune out. How boring. We don't.
Well, there needs to be a certain air of lightness.
We need to add 60 minutes. Yeah. We need people to tune in and get something out of it. Add value.
Now, well, you have a reputation for your laugh on
yes.
air.
Really?
Which guest made you laugh more than any other?
Oh, gosh. Let's see. Oh, and terrible. I can't remember his name now. His mother lives here in town, and he did, it was the last year, 2008, when I was still president of the Houston GLBT Political Caucus, and he came on. He had written a book about being gay, and he's a comedian, and he went on and he would read the stories. It was before you came on the air, and I just cracked up. I couldn't hold it. My sides were hurting when it was all over, and I was to keep from just laughing so loud in here, I put my hand over my mouth so that it wouldn't make a sound.
Someone's calling you on the radio.
Oh, is that it? I know. Probably somebody giving us all a hard time.
Most difficult interview?
Oh, my.
It's the interviewers that go, yes.
There have been a number of them. The most difficult, I think, was when we were talking after our friend, the young lady, was murdered over here not too far.
Myra Call.
Thank you. I was having trouble remembering her name. And it was just asking those questions about it and getting the description, because I have been assaulted. And it is a terribly scary thing to be assaulted, and especially when you're a transgender person, because you don't know whether it's just a simple robbery, you know, if there's anything simple about a robbery, or somebody has tagged you as a transgender person and just not only wants to steal from you, but kill you, or even worse, cripple you.
Mm.
Which leaves you, you know, with unable to function because they've left you in a mess. And as the Transgender Day of Remembrance always we talk about, there is how violence against transgenders is multiplied. You know, a gay person may be stabbed twice out of a hate crime. A transgender is stabbed 26 times and cut up in little pieces. I mean, it's that kind of hatefulness.
How has the transgendered community changed since you've been on the radio? I mean, what have been the changes that you've seen?
There's a level of acceptance and a level of understanding in the transgender community, not only from outside the transgender community, because I'm out. Everybody sees me. A lot of people know me. I wouldn't be running for office if they didn't know me. And because of that, it's someone that they can see. And I like to think that I'm a good example, you know, that instead of going to, you know, the terrible TV shows that have the transgenders that are just absolutely wackadoodle, most transgenders are just people that just want to be left alone and have their life and to live their lives. And some of us are activists. I think that more activists are out. I don't think that there are those that go stealth after they transition. But I have seen a marked growth in the people who are still out as being transgender. And that's being proud of who they are. I'm proud of who I am. And I think that is transmitted over to them.
What's the most rewarding interview you've done in your 6 years on Queer Voices?
Oh, gosh. I really wasn't prepared for all of your questions on this.
I have an answer, but I'm not being interviewed.
Oh. Well, would you answer that one for me?
Well, I would have to. I'm going to answer for Jennifer. It was the interview right after Anise was elected.
Mm-hmm.
She came on, and she talked with us about... She announced on our show before the whole election, her campaign began, and then the night, you know, the show after she won... The runoff, she came on, and I mean that was the most rewarding interview.
Oh yeah, it was. I was misty. It was just, I was incredible, because I was there at Riva's the night she won her first election, and I was in tears. And I remember there was a chant that she mayor, you know, that she was going to be mayor.
Well, that's my most rewarding interview.
And so then all the way. Yeah, I would say that would rate right up there. Yes,
I mean,
yes,
to be part of history and, you know, have her come on. And...
Well, rewarding, I think the Joel Salmoni's interview I did, it was actually a coup. There was this big event occurred around, it wasn't the... HRC, the INDA, it was another one, and I had already scheduled him.
Yeah.
And so we already had him on, and we were the first interview to talk about the issues, and that was somewhat of a Q&A, and we got it down. It was really good. It was, we Queer Voices made, you know, the national news, which was sort of cool.
I remember that interview, and it was kind of all you, and you kind of...
I was prepared. I was ready. I was ready for the interview before, you know, for other issues. But when I got him on there, I went right into the new issues, and it was very good, very rewarding, and very much so.
What do you see yourself doing when you get elected? How will you change the face of our community?
Well, I...
What's next? What's the future for Jennifer?
Well, first of all, I'm running for Houston City Council at large, position 2. And I always like, you know, I always get the first question. I'm going to answer that question. But the first question always is, why are you running? And I always tell them, I love this city. Mm-hmm. You know, I moved here in October of 1980 to take a job. And I've had two opportunities since then, real good opportunities to move away for business opportunities. And I, after thinking about it and going and visiting the other cities, I said, you know, this is home. Mm-hmm. This is my home. This is a city that has accepted me for who I am. And I can walk out, go anywhere in this city with my head held high, mm-hmm. and been embraced by people. So this is my home. My roots go deep. You know, and so this is why. What I want to see in our city is that the issues are around jobs. I believe that this city is the best kept secret in America. Now, Anise has been doing a lot about getting our name out and going, you know, city and bringing in. We need business here, and it's not all about oil and gas. And some people have spoken to me about oil and gas, and you know, when the oil and gas industry comes back. Well, you know, at $150 a barrel oil, they're making all the money they need. They're just not hiring people. So
it hasn't gone anywhere.
It's got to be generating new business, new small businesses, bringing in new business. But key to where I see we can make our city go forward in economic development is take the industries that are fledgling here and help build those industries, help promote them, just make it part of that.
What do you see as the fledgling industries?
Well, one that I use an example because, and I've talked about it here on the show, is the film and television industry. In the 80s, they were talking about Houston as the third coast. And then something happened, and I'm not going to go into the why, but what happened is nothing has happened. Since the mid-80s, we've had one major motion picture come here that was brought here by the city. Most of it is from the producers that produce films here.
And that evil city to the north gets all the film.
Well, what we have to remember is they're not doing anything. They don't have anything more than we have. We actually have a lot more. I've worked professionally in the film and television industry as a side business for 30 years since I came to Houston. And it's about location, scouting, and management. Locations. I know where to find the locations in the city to bring producers in. I could bring producers in if we had the business there. Quick example. Dallas did $160 million worth of film and television business in 2010. Austin did 218 or so. Now, of those numbers, Houston did 20. Mm-hmm. Of those numbers, 70% are wages, are people's wages. And with, $100 million worth of business with a dynamic economic effect is seven times that, $700 million, almost $1 billion in economic activity that could generate sales taxes and so on and so forth.
And it also promotes the image of Houston and brings in kind of a, tangential.
It improves the image. It puts it all out there. Of course, then I go to public safety, but I've been on the Buildings and Standards Commission now for a number of years, and one of the things I've learned is that what the city needs most, and it's not like we're not trying, but we need to really redouble our efforts, and that's about community involvement in the policing. Partners, I always like to say communities in partnership with the police because, you know, that was the whole idea of Lee Brown's putting in these neighborhood storefronts. Only thing about it is they've closed a lot of them. And those neighborhoods don't have that comfort level with the police officers in their neighborhood. And that's, you know, that's just missing. And that makes people feel safe about their neighborhoods or they have a place to go. And that's really something that really needs to be improved. And of course, we've got our budget problems, obviously, and then our infrastructure. And one of the things is to make sure that the funds that we're paying into the infrastructure go to the places that need it the most. Well, and that's just oversight.
I know I will miss getting to spend time with you every Monday night. I know the people of Houston will miss hearing your voice every Monday night, and we wish you the best of luck.
I want to say one last thing, and I want to thank all of the listeners who voted in 2010 to make me an Outsmart Magazine Award for the gayest and greatest female voice on
favorite,
the radio.
Yeah, female.
I really appreciate that, and thank you for that.
Jennifer, thank you. I've been coming here every night for 3 years, and I'm going to miss you. But, you know, we'll see you later.
I'm just going away for a few months.
Taking a hiatus.
So. Yes, vote for me.
All right, and this is Queer Voices.
I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm John Beaupre.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending September 3rd, 2011. The theologically conservative National Presbyterian Church of Mexico severed its ties this week with the Presbyterian Church USA because U.S. Presbyterians voted in May to open ordination to partnered gay and lesbian candidates. The churches share about 5 million members and a 139-year history of social service ministries that span the U.S.-Mexican border. Presbyterian Church USA leaders said they are saddened by the decision and hope to find a way to continue helping the needy in Mexico and along the border. Meanwhile, a group of theologically conservative U.S. Presbyterians who also oppose the ordination of partnered lesbian and gay clergy met last week in Minnesota to consider breaking away from the denomination. Organizers of what they're calling the Fellowship of Presbyterians said that disaffected church members plan to meet again in Orlando, Florida in January to decide how to proceed.
Britain's leading LGBT rights group Stonewall has announced plans to evangelize for equality abroad. The group became an official charity in 2003 and needed permission from Britain's Charity Commission to expand its efforts to other countries. Stonewall Chief Executive Ben Summerskill told the UK website Pink News this week that most of his group's legal objectives had been achieved and that we're now in a stronger position to commend Britain's legislative framework to other countries around the world. While the group has no plans to send staff to other countries, Summerskill said that the expansion of Stonewall's efforts were prompted by a survey of its supporters during the past 12 months. But, he added, that overseas lobbying will not dilute any of our existing domestic activities. We retain our ambition to make Britain a worldwide beacon for equality. For example, many activists are still pushing for full civil marriage rights in the UK instead of the currently available less than equal civil partnerships.
California's marriage equality banning Proposition 8 was back in court this week. A federal judge heard arguments on whether the video recording of last year's landmark trial on the measure's constitutionality should be made public. Lawyers representing two same-gender couples, the city of San Francisco and a coalition of media groups, told Chief U.S. District Judge James Ware that the tapes will demonstrate why Ware's predecessor, former Chief Judge Vaughn Walker, ultimately struck down the voter-approved measure. They said that release of the videos would also counter any perceptions that Walker was biased, a charge made by Prop 8 supporters soon after Walker began his retirement by officially coming out. Attorneys for the band's backers argued that releasing videos of the 13-day trial would be a direct violation of the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling on the issue. In January 2010, the High Court voted 5-4 to forbid live video coverage of the high-profile case. Walker asked the court staff to keep recording the proceedings, however, but sealed the videos with the understanding that they were being produced for his own review in reaching a decision. At the end of this week's hearing, Judge Ware said that it might affect the judicial process if a second judge decides to make public what a previous judge has promised would only be used for limited purposes. He said that while he didn't feel urgency, he expects to issue a written ruling sometime soon.
A mistrial was declared this week in the murder case against teenager Brandon McInerney. No one disputes that the then 14-year-old McInerney shot his 15-year-old gender-variant classmate Lawrence King twice in the back of the head at point-blank range in a student-filled Oxnard, California junior high school computer classroom in February 2008. During the two-month trial in which the now 17-year-old McInerney was charged as an adult, his attorneys presented what prosecutors called a gay panic defense, arguing that the teenager was driven to violence by King's repeated sexual taunts of him and other boys. A few teachers also testified that campus administrators ignored the tensions King was creating when he began wearing makeup and women's spike-heeled boots on campus. The jury had been given the options of convicting McInerney of first or second-degree murder, which could have put him behind bars for more than 50 years, or a voluntary manslaughter, which would have brought a 20-year prison term. But they told Judge Charles Campbell on September 1st that they were unable to reach the required unanimous verdict on any of those charges. The Los Angeles Times reported that the last jury vote was 7-5 in favor of a manslaughter conviction. Prosecutors say they'll retry McInerney, calling his actions premeditated murder and a hate crime. According to the Ventura County Star, McInerney's defense team rejected a previous plea deal from the prosecution of 25 years to life.
Gay former U.S. Army Lieutenant Dan Choi was in court this week for chaining himself to the White House fence in November of last year in a protest of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. 12 other activists were arrested with Choi for demonstrating against the U.S. military policy banning service by open gays and lesbians. But they each avoided jail time by agreeing to plead guilty to misdemeanor charges of disobeying a lawful police order to disperse, and by promising not to be arrested again in the ensuing 4 months. But Choi refused to follow suit. His attorney said in opening remarks on August 29th that people arrested for protesting at the White House are usually charged in local court, where the penalty for disobeying a police order is a fine of between $100 and $1,000. Choi was arrested in March and April 2010 for participating in similar protests, but prosecutors dismissed the charges against him on those occasions. But now he's charged in federal court for the November protest and faces both a $5,000 fine and up to 6 months behind bars. Choi testified passionately and at length on the second day of the trial about what he says is an attempt to muzzle his First Amendment rights. But the government prosecutor told the presiding judge on the trial's third day that she intended to file a motion against his ruling that there was evidence to allow Choi's lawyers to pursue a defense of vindictive prosecution. The judge issued a 10-day delay to allow the prosecutor the time to ask a higher court to overturn that ruling.
Even though Don't Ask, Don't Tell will be history on September 20th, the gay political group Log Cabin Republicans continues to push a federal court ruling declaring the policy to be a violation of the U.S. Constitution. The Obama administration asked a three-judge panel of the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals this week to overturn the 2010 ruling of District Judge Virginia Phillips, arguing that repeal of the policy will nullify the legal case against it. But Log Cabin attorney Dan Woods told the court that the ruling declaring the policy unconstitutional needs to be confirmed to ensure that future administrations don't reinstate it. He pointed out that several candidates for the Republican presidential nomination have vowed to revive the 1993 military ban. Woods also argued that vacating the ruling, as the government has requested, would undermine efforts by service members who were honorably discharged under the policy to pursue reinstatement or damages. For example, most got only half of the separation pay given to other service members receiving honorable discharges. Those with less than honorable discharges can't get veterans benefits, and some service members who were discharged under the policy have even been sued by the government to recoup student loans. Government lawyers said that discharged service members could seek relief through individual lawsuits. The judge gave no hint as to when or how they might rule.
Meanwhile, Pentagon officials have approved the distribution on Army and Air Force bases of a magazine by, for, and about lesbian and gay military personnel. OutServe is published by the group of the same name that was founded last year for closeted active duty gay and lesbian service members and veterans. The group said the third edition of its magazine would be published on September 20th, the official date of the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. It will feature profiles of some 100 of its more than 4,000 members who will be publicly acknowledging their sexual orientation for the first time. OutServe's co-director, who uses the pseudonym J.D. Smith, said in a statement that gay, lesbian, and bisexual service members once had to conceal their true identities. By featuring their picture and their stories, we are signaling that time has passed.
And finally, some U.S. politicians have discovered in recent months when they've posted revealing pictures of themselves online that sooner or later they'll be made public. That lesson seemed to have been lost on Roberto Arango, an anti-gay Republican senator in the U.S. territory of Puerto Rico, who represented the capital of San Juan. He resigned this week after pictures of him shirtless and also on his hands and knees naked from behind surfaced on Grindr, an iPhone application for gay and bisexual men looking for sex. Arango would neither confirm nor deny that the fuzzy Grindr photos published by the local media were of him, but claimed that he may have accidentally posted photos online that he took of himself to document his recent weight loss. Arango, who was vice chair of George W. Bush's 2004 re-election campaign in Puerto Rico, has a consistently anti-gay record. Activist and blogger Andre Duque told The Advocate that Arango led an effort to limit the legal recognition of a couple in Puerto Rico to one man and one woman, and successfully sponsored a bill that banned adoption rights for LGBT people. He also used a Spanish anti-gay slur to attack a political opponent during a campaign rally. It's yet another lesson for closeted homophobic politicians that posting photos of yourself online can come back to bite you in the ass, especially if you flaunted that part of your anatomy.
That's News Wrap for the week ending September 3rd, 2011. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Greg Gordon, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and produced by Steve Pride. Read the text of this week's News Wrap online at thiswayout.org. For This Way Out, I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Rick Watts.
This is Queer Voices.
This is Daniel Williams.
And Jennifer Renee.
And we're with Aubrey from the Gamma Rho Lambda chapter at the University of Houston. Welcome, Aubrey.
I'm good to be here.
And I was not even going to attempt to pronounce your last names, but for all of our guests, your last name is said, how do you pronounce that?
Palubit.
Palubit. Listeners, I've been attempting to get that down for the last 15 minutes.
We were having fun trying to get that. That's
I am
something.
Particularly excited to have Aubrey on because I am Greek myself. I'm a proud member of Delta Lambda Phi. And so it's very exciting for me to hear about the work the chapter is doing at U of H. What do y'all have going on coming up?
Well, right now we're in the middle of rush. Basically, it's standard recruitment for every Greek organization. We started this last Friday. We'll pick it back up tomorrow with sort of like a game night with, of course, free food, because that's what every college student loves, is free pizza. And we'll move up, do like a movie. We're doing movies on Wednesday, as well as a bowling event on Thursday. And then Friday is the big coup de grace, the chocolate bar out in Rice Village.
Oh, nice.
Ooh, how wonderful.
Are those events open to any U of H student?
They're open to any U of H student. You can, just about anybody can come. The sorority itself is open to everyone except cisgendered men, which, for those who aren't familiar with that term, it's male-identified men or someone who's physically born male and identifies their gender as male.
So Gamma Rho Lambda is for both female-bodied individuals and people who identify as female.
Yes, and also for people who are, aren't traditionally male or female-bodied, or don't identify as male or female.
Mm.
We cover the full spectrum of everybody.
And what's the history of the sorority?
It was founded in around 2003 at Arizona State University by a very small group of women because they wanted an organization like this. They wanted a social support system for themselves and trans people and allies. And they went through all of the huge responsibilities and everything they had to get through to actually found it. And in 2006, after they graduated, they formed a national council. So we're currently at 8 official chapters and 3 colonies nationwide. Most of them are actually in California, but we are scattered. There's one in Kansas, and there's another one up in New York State.
And the group at U of H is still a colony, I believe?
We are still a colony. This is our last semester as a colony. After we've inducted this final, this will be our third class to induct, we'll be officially a chapter.
And you'll get your chapter letter
mm-hmm.
and all of that. Very
yep.
exciting. What are the challenges that y'all have faced in organizing at U of H?
There are some. Some of them are more subtle than others. One of them, of course, was getting on Greek Council. There was always pushback on the date when we needed to send in our applications. It was always the next semester. We eventually worked through that, mostly by contacting someone who's in charge of everything instead of working through one person. And we were able to organize some meetings and discuss what was going on and what the issues were. And now we aren't on council, but we do have an advisor in the Greek office. And there are plans for them to start including other non-traditional Greek organizations and the same way they're including us. So we might eventually form our own council.
What was the pushback that you got?
It was generally, we've just reorganized. We're accepting applications in this semester. It was something a standard college student would actually have a lot of issues with, because it was very subtle. It was not, we don't like you. It was, you can join, but in a little bit.
But that's a very common experience for a lot of the LGBT fraternities and sororities organizing, that difficulty in getting on the official Greek organizations or parent organizations that are on the campus. I know when we were organizing the Delta Lambda Phi chapter at the University of North Texas, we were told, you don't have to be on the Greek Council. That's okay. We'll give you an advisor out of the sexuality and gender office instead. So I think that is an issue that a lot of groups face. What about on campus? You're saying you had issues with some administration, but what about on campus? What's the reaction been from students?
It's mixed, generally. Actually, doing tabling has actually let me see a greater range of what the students are like. And you get everything from people that you would never imagine going, I have this family member and they're gay or trans or bi. And they're just like, this is fantastic and wonderful. And they're signing, putting all of their information on a piece of paper so you can contact them. And then you get to the ones that, like, pick up the flyer and they look at it. Of course, there's a rainbow on it. And they go, what's the rainbow for? And you go, it's the gay pride symbol. And they go, I'll check out the website. So, they haven't actually encountered a lot of, or any overt backlash from the students on campus. Everyone's at the very least polite. So, we don't have any issues with that. We've actually started working with some of the other Greek organizations on campus. We're hoping to start with one of the sororities. Chi Upsilon Sigma, mm-hmm. or Chi Upsilon Sigma, as I completely screw up my pronunciation.
About to say.
Very embarrassing. So we're hoping to do some service work with them, as well as just do some standard sort of Greek socialization bonding issues.
U of H has a reputation as a commuter school. How does that affect Greek culture on campus?
It is... I'm not sure about how on other campuses it is, but it does make it interesting. For us, at least, we're incredibly diverse inside of our sorority. We have me, I'm post-baccalaureate, I'm back getting a second bachelor's. One of our other sisters is a non-traditional student. She works full-time and then takes evening classes. And then, of course, we have the standard students that live on campus, take full-time classes, have jobs on the side. So there's a lot of shuffling for us, a lot of balancing things, making sure nobody's taking on too much. Because one of the things we do emphasize is your academics come first. Gamerland is fun, but you're here to get a diploma.
I remember back to my college days, and I was in a fraternity then. My hair was shorter then, and it was about service. It was about making sure your grades were up and assisting and tutoring where necessary, but also it was about service work. And is that what the organization is going to do, follow that same example?
It's actually one of our main tenets. One of them is to be a social support system for its members. But another one is to be a service organization and to give back to the community, because it does give so much to us. We've worked with LHI, Lesbian Health Initiative. We've also worked with TFA, the Transgender Foundation of America. And we also worked with Hatch to help them raise money for the prom. And this last spring, we did a toiletry drive for Grace Place, which is a homeless shelter for LGBT youth.
Oh, and I also, if I recall correctly, the Sisters of Gamma Rho Lambda were very vital to the Transgender Non-Discrimination Summit that just took place at U of H.
Yes, this summer, August 13th, we were there helping or volunteering, making sure everyone knew which room they were supposed to be in, where to go to park, making sure everyone got their lunch. It was very important, getting your lunch. And just making sure everything ran smoothly. The things all the volunteers always do, and no one really sees, but they're important. And for us, it's a chance to get out and get back in touch with all the people we missed over the summer.
What kind of interaction does the U of H colony have with the other chapters?
It's during the school year, it's minimal, but we do keep in contact with National Council. Some of us have friends in the other chapters and colonies. But convention for us is a big time for us to all get back together and gossip about everything that happened throughout the year, because it is a women's organization, so there is quite a bit of gossip.
You're sharing with one another.
Yeah. It's also, it's a gay women's organization, so there's even more gossip than normal. But see what everyone's doing, everything from just who's dating who to like any issues they're having on their campus and things that we've gone through to help them, because we all have similar issues. And we might have been able to handle it on our campus, but they're having issues on their campus to deal with it. And some of it, we have a new colony up in Berkeley. So we were helping them deal with things like they're going to induct their second class this semester. So they had a lot of questions about handle some things like the traditional mentors. You always have a mentor when you enter into the organization, which is known as your big. And how they select littles for each of the bigs. Like, what's the best way to do this? So, you know.
Gosh, I'd forgotten all about that. Mm-hmm. That's right. Yes.
And those people stick with you for...
Ever.
I mean, some of my best friends are still my brothers.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and actually, right after I got back to convention, my Facebook news feed was... All of my friends are now friends with all of my friends. So.
Now, we had Michael McHugh from the Student Government Association on last week, and we were talking with him about the general environment for LGBT students at the University of Houston. What is it like for a lesbian or gay, bisexual, transgender student on campus?
It's actually a fairly accepting campus. There is, of course, always the one person that says it's not quite accepting. There are those that just aren't accepting at all on campus. You're going to run into that no matter where you are or what environment you're in. It is not as accepting of trans individuals, and that is something that we have to deal with because we are trans-inclusive organization. For starters, they have the non-discrimination sort of memos and things. It's a non-discrimination...
It's a memo.
Yeah,
that
it's a memo.
We talked about
the Lopez memo.
It's a Lopez memo.
Yeah, that's a big issue on campus because of legal names and forcing trans students basically to out themselves, but then not providing overt protection for them.
Exactly. So. That was the downside of that.
Mm-hmm. So for us, that's an issue, but we do what we can to support them and make sure they know about the memo. So they know that if something happens, they are protected, even though the person that's sort of harassing them doesn't know that they're protected.
In addition to Gamma Rho Lambda, there are a number of other on-campus organizations, are there not?
Yes, there's actually quite a few. There is a standard social organization I think every campus with a large gay population has. It's called Global. There's also an advocacy group called the LGBT Advocates, and I know after speaking with the president that one of their main goals this semester is to make headway in changing the transgender non-discrimination issues on campus. And there are several professional societies that I'm not aware of because they're not for my major.
What is your major?
I'm an electrical engineering major.
Okay.
So there is a professional society for us, but there is not a chapter on the U of H campus. But I believe there's a law organization, a law professional society on campus that has a gay and lesbian.
Outlaw.
Yeah. So...
Well, you said you're in the middle of Rush right now. What else is coming up for the chapter? Colony, pardon me. What else is coming up for the colony?
We are currently talking with LHI about helping them...
And LHI is?
The Lesbian Health Initiative, about helping them in general with their health fairs, as well as in February, next semester, with their gala. And some of what we'll be doing this semester is hopefully we'll be raising money and we'll be able to purchase one or two items to then donate to their raffle. Because we also do philanthropy work as well as just donating our hours. We donate objects, money as well to organizations. So we're looking forward to that. We're looking forward to working with our resource center on campus for National Coming Out Day. They're doing a huge thing where everyone's going to wear a different colored shirt, and they're going to make a huge rainbow out of people. And we're hoping to help with that, as well as get our fundraising in for this semester and do some sell some pride jewelry as well. And hopefully the Council for Ethnic Organizations, they're hoping to work, I believe, with the No Hate campaign. It's all in preliminary talks, but we're hoping that we'll be able to help them with that as well.
And why Gamma Rho Lambda? If I'm a U of H student, why would I want to rush pledge Gamma Rho Lambda?
We, as I said, we are a social organization, and because we're smaller, we're much more close-knit than the larger Global is. Global is, you can actually go to Global and sit in every single meeting and never speak to a single person. It's that big.
And some people are looking for that.
Yeah, and some people want that. But if you're there and you don't know anybody and you need close friends, we're a good place to start. At the very least, come to our Rush events and meet us. We have people that have come to our Rush events in the past and have not actually joined, and we still actually have fairly good friendships with most of them and some close ones with a few of them, even though they're not our sisters. But we are close to each other as our sisters. We're the ones that we call first.
Well, I think that joining your organization or any other Greek organization was all about support. You know, you come to a big campus. Many of them as freshmen are alone, don't know anybody possibly, and it gives them an opportunity to start making friends. And so, I always recommend joining a Greek society.
Well, and the origins of Greek letter societies harken from a time when it was more difficult for families to communicate with their children. And when you couldn't just send an email or pick up the phone, you had to wait 2 weeks for a letter to get to campus and 2 weeks for it to get back. And so Greek letter organizations were formed as a way for families to ensure that there was a network of people, a second family that would look out for their children on campus. Mm-hmm. And I think for a number of LGBT people, there are barriers to communication with their families. I know that was certainly my case in college. And so, for me, my fraternity became my family. And when I had difficulties in college, that's who I turned to.
Mm-hmm. We have had people like that in all of the chapters and colonies. And we've had members that are not out. Mm-hmm. And that is another thing about us, is we don't care what your status is.
Or if you've figured out your status
If you figured out, you just got it. We are LGBTQIA, and Q does stand for questioning in our case. So if you don't know, but you think you're not, then you are welcome to join. But we are there. We're a social support system. Then think that's probably primarily, we're there for you socially, we're there for you academically. We'll have impromptu study sessions occasionally. It's like someone's like, I can't get this, and we'll sit down and help them. We do everything. We sit down and we do talk. Someone says, I have an issue and we need to talk about it. We'll set aside time so we have time to talk to them. And because we're so diverse, somebody's had experience with the issue, either themselves or they know someone who has. So someone has advice and someone can help. At the very least, we're there. Some place where you can go cry if you need a place to cry, or just scream and yell about whatever's going wrong in your life right now. So.
And you said the colony's working toward getting its charter at the end of the semester?
Yes. It was interesting. Last spring, we had some stumbling blocks. The ice storm hit right in the middle of rush for us.
Oh.
We had one rushie that actually was inducted, and halfway the semester she realized that it was just too much for her. Mm. She had so many things she was not able to. She felt like she wasn't ready, which is her decision. So we respected that, and she went. She is going to come back and rush again with us this semester. But because we did not actually induct anyone at the end of the semester, there was nobody.
Mm-hmm.
Our charter got pushed back a semester.
Mm.
But
okay.
So everything else was actually approved. We'd hit everything. We were actually told, this is really impressive. So, yeah. So they're just like, well, as long as you induct another class in the fall semester, there should be no issues with giving you your charter.
And we had talked at the non-discrimination summit, and you said you had groupies?
Yes, there is a fan club for those that don't join. Mostly it's cisgendered men. And they've they have recently created a Facebook group. It is, if you search for GRH, and I think it's GRH Gamerlanda Fan Club. It'll pop up. There's a picture of some ho-hos.
Ho-hos.
Yes, there's some ho-hos. There's a talk of a shirt with purple ho-hos. It's, would you join the
Why
group?
Why ho-ho?
Well, it has to do with the name of the group, which I can't remember. I don't know if I'm allowed to say it on the air.
Oh, okay.
Well, if you don't think you should, don't.
But if you go to the Facebook group, it is on there, so you can see why.
Intrigue.
Why there are ho-hos. So, and you, it used to be the name for significant others of members, but it got moved to the fan club, thankfully.
I see.
Oh, okay.
So, it's run actually by the fiancé of our current president. He's the one running the group at the moment. So.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, you could always encourage them to reform the chapter of Death Line Defiant.
Or rename it, at least.
I've mentioned it to a few people. There's actually one new incoming freshman that was very disappointed that we did not accept cisgender men. So, and he was asking questions about DLP, so.
There you go.
So I'm hoping that when he gets settled, he'll actually start it. Because there's actually quite a few gay men and bi men on campus that would be more than willing to, would actually benefit from that. As well as, although we do accept trans men, it is a female organization.
Right.
Some just aren't comfortable.
Right.
Being around that many women. So.
Well, how about transgender women?
We do accept trans women. We have actually, our chapter has, our little colony has had them. And on the national level, we have had them as well. So, we have no issues with it at all. We accept everyone. Our basic motto is, you are who you are. And that's who we're going to accept you as.
That's fantastic. Where can I find more information about the colony and your rush?
Actually, our website, gamerolambda.org/UH, has all of our rush information as well as more information about our specific colony. We have a Facebook page, and it's facebook.com/gamerolambda.UH. So both of those have all of our rush information on them. They're actually Facebook events, so you can go RSVP if you wish, or not. But they'll have the times and the locations, as well as if, like for the chocolate bar, you have no way of getting to the chocolate bar since it is off campus. You can go post there that you need a ride, and we're actually going to be setting up a carpool for the people that can't get over there.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's great. Good to do that.
And you've got an event tomorrow night?
Tomorrow night, yes. We are doing our pizza and game night. We'll be playing Apples to Apples. Which,
oh, I love that game.
It can get hilariously fun, especially as the night goes on. And people start just throwing random cards out. It will be, if you're on campus, it will be in the Mediterranean room, and it starts at 6 o'clock. And hopefully it will go beyond 9, but we only have the room to 9. So we hope to see some people out there and some new faces.
And we'll get all this information up on our Twitter feed. You can follow us on Twitter, Queer Voices, all one word. Aubrey, thank you so much for coming on tonight. It's been a pleasure, and it always makes me happy to be able to support other LGBT Greek organizations. It's such an important part of my life, and I would encourage any student at U of H who is interested in joining your sorority to participate in your rush events.
Yeah, well, thank you, and I was glad to be on here. It's nice to let people know we exist, because there's a lot of people like, there's a Greek organization that's gay on campus?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Thank you again.
You're welcome.
And this is Queer Voices.
Hi, I'm Brian DeShazer, director of the Pacifica Radio Archives. 10 years after the tragedy of 9/11, Pacifica Radio will present a national broadcast featuring special programming from each Pacifica radio station and the archives that examines its impact on American society. We invite you, the listener, to be part of the Pacifica Radio Archives Hour by including your voice along with those of Stephen Rohde, Howard Zinn, Maxine Waters, June Jordan, Bertrand Russell, Jermaine Greer, and many others. Tell us about how you heard about the attack, what you did, how you feel 10 years later, or perhaps you heard something on Pacifica Radio that was extraordinary. The subject is wide open. Call us at 1-800-735-0230. We want to hear how 9/11 changed your life or your worldview. These will be part of the commemoration broadcast on September 11, 2011. The message number, again, is 1-800-735-0230.
Pacifica is listener-sponsored radio. Listener sponsorship is an answer to the practical problem of getting better radio programs and keeping them. A focus on advertisers or the mass audience accounts for the mediocrity of corporate radio. With such mediocrity, improvement of radio is utopian. When listeners support the radio they enjoy, their choices become better. Listener sponsorship takes control of your radio out of the hands of companies and into the hands of the community. But maintaining this sort of radio requires you. Your pledge of support keeps KPFT on the air as a vital community resource. So call our membership department at 713-526-4000, extension 314, to become a member today. You can even go online at kpft.org to make your pledge. Your pledge is essential to keep listener sponsorship viable for generations to come. So call 713-526-4000 to support KPFT. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston.
Widely seen as the channel of reference for coverage of the Middle East and Global South, Al Jazeera English can now be heard on 90.1 KPFT. Al Jazeera English has become a world leader in the coverage of Africa, Asia, the Middle East, Europe, and the Americas. You can hear Al Jazeera English weekdays from 5 to 6 a.m. on KPFT FM and HD1, or at 9 a.m. weekdays on KPFT HD2. Al Jazeera English has received many awards for its reporting. With a staff of more than 1,000 from 50 different countries, the aim of Al Jazeera English is to provide independent and impartial news for an international audience. Again, you can hear Al Jazeera English weekdays from 5 to 6 a.m. on KPFT and HD1, or at 9 a.m. weekdays on KPFT HD2. Visit kpft.org for a complete program schedule. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Valinsky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Hey! Sing if you're glad to be gay. Just sing if you're happy. This way.
Hi, this is Summer Iman.
And Daniel Williams.
And we're here with Mark Levin and Michael Moore of Keshet Houston.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Now, you two gentlemen are from this group, which is a group for GLBT people who are Jewish, correct?
Correct, yes.
So, tell us, I mean, like, what does your group do? Like, what are the events that you kind of do, hold and such?
So far, what we've been focusing on is trying to provide some religious opportunities, religious experience opportunities for people who are searching Judaically and trying to involve themselves in the community. So a number of programs, for example, we visited a lot of the synagogues in town, made ourselves available to meet with different people there, and just exposed ourselves to the community in a number of ways and trying to allow people to find their way into the Jewish world, where often throughout history they have had a hard time.
A lot of our activities are also focused on social opportunities. We've had some parties and combination of Jewish holidays with the socializing opportunities to bring people together in that type of an atmosphere.
Yeah, you all are very good at getting the word out. I found out about your group because of a flyer that someone left at Black Hole Coffee.
we pass out a lot of those flyers to our members and ask them to leave them wherever they see a bulletin board. It's a good way to find people.
Yeah,
a lot of the people who are involved in our group have been outside of the Jewish community for a while. Maybe they don't feel comfortable going to their synagogue or being involved with the mainstream Jewish community. So a lot of the people that we found who've joined our group found us some other way because they were not participating in Jewish activities at that point in their lives.
So I'm guessing that sounds like there's quite a few individuals that are having a hard time finding and accepting community or reconciling their sexual feelings with their faith, or is it just that there aren't welcome, like there are certain communities that aren't as welcoming? Yes.
Well, in reality, historically, that's been the case. in recent years, particularly here in Houston, much of the Jewish community is very open. You're going to find that the great majority of synagogues are indeed welcoming. The rabbis are welcoming. The communities themselves are the doors open. They're willing to say hello and bring you in. It's really only in the more fundamental communities where there's still some hesitation, and then that's a matter of degree as to the level of hesitation. But the great majority of synagogues here in town are open, and they're comfortable places to be. There you can walk in and they'll celebrate anniversaries with you and recognize the couples.
And I think that a lot of times people have grown up, for instance, in the conservative tradition, which only recently started recognizing gay and lesbian relationships, began ordaining gay and lesbian rabbis. People have grown up in a community where before it wasn't something that was accepted or acceptable within their families or within their communities. And it's something new to them that the community that they grew up in is now officially recognizing their sexual orientation and the relationships that they're in.
Okay. So what does keshet mean? Like, to people who speak Yiddish, or Hebrew, rather, Hebrew.
For the goys in the audience, please.
Keshet is a rainbow. Oh. It's the term used in the biblical stories of Noah, and it's actually a name of a number of organizations throughout the country, and so we've kind of borrowed the name as well. It has all symbolic representation.
Okay. Are you a franchise of that group, or are you your own self-sufficient organization?
It's a standalone organization here in Houston, but we maintain contacts and try to network with other gay and lesbian Jewish organizations.
Very cool. So, I know that you have a number of events coming up. Could you tell us about a few of them?
Certainly. Our next event is within the next couple weeks, the weekend of the 16th and 17th of September. We'll be going down to Galveston. There are two synagogues in Galveston. Our plans are within this year to visit both of them. Well, like Mark said, we are trying to plan a lot of synagogue visits where we go and introduce ourselves to the leadership of the synagogue. Be there as a group and let that synagogue introduce itself to our members, because the reality is that synagogues are also looking to get new members and maintain membership, and so they're also kind of doing a sales pitch when we go. So within this year, we're planning on going to the two synagogues in Galveston. This time we'll be going to the conservative synagogue and spending Friday evening and Saturday there and worshiping with them and doing some socializing and going to the beach.
Very cool. And there's also a dinner that's being held in October?
Yes, we will be celebrating the holiday of Sukkot. Sukkot is the harvest festival within Jewish tradition. Basically, one of the ways in which that holiday is celebrated is we construct huts mm-hmm. in the community, much like the Israelites who traveled through the desert. And the tradition is to eat one's meals within those Sukkot. And so on Monday, October 17th, we'll be having a dinner at Congregation Brit Shalom in Bel Air.
Okay. So there's also in November, there's a book author who's coming to town to the Jewish Cultural Center in the Maryland area?
Right. The Jewish Community Center has an annual books and arts fair. It lasts a couple of weeks, and they have one of the main things that they do is bring in authors to give talks about books that they have out, and they do some films and music and that sort of thing. But one of the authors that they're having at the fair this year is named Jay Michelson. He has a new book coming out next month called God Versus Gay, The Religious Case for Equality. And so our group is going to be sponsoring his visit. We're going to try and get as many people out to his talk and his book signing there at the JCC, and then we're hosting a dinner for him afterwards. And that's on Wednesday, November 9th at 6:15 p.m. at the JCC on Braeswood.
Okay. And I know there's all, like, are you the largest Jewish group in town, or the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender Jewish group in town?
Well, there are two groups. There's another organization called Mishpachat Alizim. They've been around for a while, and their principal thing that they do is they have Friday night services once a month. They meet over at Baby Barnaby's on Fairview.
Just a worship community?
It is. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And they generally will get about 10 to 20 people there, and they get together Friday evenings at 8 o'clock, and then they have a social after the Friday night services. So we try to do things that complement what they're doing, because we have a lot of overlap of our membership, and we want their people to come to our activities, and we encourage our folks to go to their services.
Very commensalism, like you know, trying to cooperate with them, you know, trying to get, like, you know, share membership, share you know, right, scheduling and all that.
That's right. And we have our goals are the same, and that's to bring gay and lesbian Jews together and back to the Jewish community.
So you mentioned earlier people re-engaging with the Jewish tradition. Is that a common narrative you hear from your members, of people who have been disengaged from the community for a while but have had a life experience and they're ready to re-engage?
I'm not sure we hear the language per se. I think they're searching. Reality is they're searching. Traditionally, it's been very difficult to find one's way into the Jewish community. As with most religions, it's really a developing process, and things have changed. Houston is a very open city. People are welcoming the gay community into the synagogue world. And so a lot of them are sort of, you can see them trying on different hats in process and trying to find where on a spectrum they fit. And that's everything from religious services, as you've described, to more social gatherings where there's just an influence of religion, even in the social experiences.
In my other life, I'm a church administrator. And one of the truisms we always talk about is if someone's walking through the door, it means something traumatic just happened to them. You know, either they just moved to town, or they just got out of a relationship, or they've just got a new job, or something has happened that has caused them to decide they want to start coming to church. Is that the sort of stories you're hearing from people who are getting engaged? Or
we don't necessarily see that. People are not necessarily as explicit as that when they talk about why
they never are
and join us, right? But you do see a common theme of people trying to get back into the community, back more associated with the Jewish community, and getting back to their Jewish roots. You'd also see a lot of people who are hoping to meet somebody Jewish.
Which can be a traumatic event in and of itself.
It can, yes.
You know, most religious institutions have demographic groups, subgroups. And so synagogues will have sisterhoods and men's clubs and organizations where people of a similar life stage can meet and gather. At this point, most of the synagogues don't have that kind of subgroup within the larger structure. So we're trying to develop that so that people have that place where they fit demographically. And then over time, that probably will happen in the synagogues itself over time.
We've actually been approached by a couple of rabbis who were interested in doing more outreach to the gay and lesbian community, making sure that those members already in their synagogues who were gay would feel comfortable being out, being a part of the community, being honest about who they were, and looking to us for maybe some guidance, some ideas about how to do that, how to outreach to the gay and lesbian community. And just like any other religious organization, these are days when they're looking to maintain their membership, because people tend to drift away, and so this is a segment of the population that they can look to bring back in.
It's kind of a more generic question. You may or may not know it. I know that church attendance in a lot of different splinters of Christianity are declining. I don't know if that's also true in Judaism. Like, synagogue attendance is also going down across the board.
Yeah, I think the same patterns are at play. I think the same freedoms that have led to that in terms of being here in America and the blessings of freedom that we have also led to many opportunities for different things going on in the same time frames, etc. And so, yeah, we've seen the same patterns. There's a many fewer people coming, depending on the date. The major holidays, people show up, but the regular routines, the numbers are definitely declining.
So on kind of an unrelated topic, and you don't have to answer if you are not comfortable, but so as a gay man or as a Jew, under which hat did Perry's attendance of the American Family Association event offend you most?
For me, it was exponential. Both and the two came together pretty strongly. It was coming from two different communities that have traditionally been persecuted by that kind of a narrative. It's scary to see that. You know, our history as Jews and our history as gay men and lesbians is that we need to be very vigilant for that sort of thing and pay very close attention to the things that they're saying and what direction they're trying to go with that type of an event and make sure that people open their eyes to the dangers of having the government involved in religious activities, because in this country it has no place, and that's why we are as great a country as we are.
Particularly, you know, ones that are very explicitly exclusivist, or exclusive and so forth. I mean, there's always kind of some tribulation with some groups regarding the national prayer events, even if they're attempting to be ecumenical or more non-particular in their direction. But that one was pretty explicit. That was they had some really interesting thoughts on lots of people.
there certainly is a tendency for people to, if they are isolating and look at other groups as different, there's a tendency to just do that across the board. It's hard to separate as a Jew versus being gay, right, how that affects it, because if they don't like one of us, the likelihood is they're not terribly fond of the other group either.
That's a very good point. That's a very good point. All right. And so where can people find out about you? I know that you have at least two different Facebook pages. I mean, what else do you all have?
Well, we post most of our information on our website. Our website is www.keshethouston.org. That's K-E-S-H-E-T, Houston.org. We have a phone number where people can call and either get information off the recording or leave a message if they need more information. And that's 832-429-5392.
It also has an interesting, you can make a different word out of that phone number, too, if I remember correctly.
Yes, if you spell it out on your telephone keypad, it comes to 832-GAY-JEWS-2.
Which is a nice get. That's a pretty impressive get.
It was a lucky phone number to come across.
Very cool, very cool. Well, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, and we appreciate you having us on KPFT, and look forward to coming back and telling you more about what we're doing in the upcoming months.
Indeed, and hopefully we can get Mr. Michelson on and have him talk about his book, too.
Yes, I know he's looking forward to that.
Awesome, awesome. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is Queer Voices.
All of my days have been misspent, stuffing out the sofa and the antenna's bent. Inside my heart, busting out at the seams. I work for the impossible American dream. Yeah, I got a job at the grocery store. Few bucks an hour, not much more. World comes in just to take things away. They eat it all up and then they sleep in the day. I try not to care, I would lose my mind. Running around the same thing time after time. Only two things bound trying to soothe my soul. Cold beer and remote control. Once upon a time I was nobody's fool. Two jobs and showing up for school. I guess it comes apart so little by little. You don't know you're there till you're stuck in there. I try not to care, I would lose my mind. Running around the same thing time after time. Only two things bound to soothe my soul. Cold beer and remote control. Sit down, the room is dark. Blurry graffiti on the benches, cross at the public park. The plastic's black and button, the haze is blue. Hey, all I want is nothing to do. 'Cause it's a long walk to bus stop, a long wait for the turning clock. The two tired cars sitting up on lots, and things are put aside like a pile of rocks. I try not to care, I will lose my mind. Running round the same thing time after time. Only two things bound to soothe my soul.
Tour from a demo album, apparently, recorded last year, and apparently it's Mike Ator backing up Mike Ator there. He sort of doubled his voice on that one. The track is called Cold Beer and Remote Control.
This is Queer Voices.
And this is Brian Levinka.
And Jennifer Renee.
And our next guest, I first met at the dedication of the Montrose Garden a couple of weeks ago. And then we had our next guest come to the rally against hate, LGBT Texans Against Hate. And our guest is Freddie Jensen, and she actually has an organization that I thought, you know, we need to get on the radio and let people know about this. So welcome, Freddie.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
What is the name of your organization?
Healing Out Loud is an organization that I founded in memory of my son, Noel, mm-hmm. who was brutally murdered in May of 2008, and he was gay.
2008.
So.
And where was that? Where did it happen?
In Houston, in his home in Houston, in the West Chase area.
I'm so sad for that.
Thank
Sorry
you.
That.
Thank you.
But something good came out of it. You started this organization, what was that prompting you wanted to do when you formed it? What was the message you wanted to give?
The message that I want to give and continue to give every chance I get. When Noel came out to me, or when he tried to come out to me, he was 16 years old. And at that point in time, I was an evangelical Christian. And I really did not
They didn't
hear.
Do a movie about you, did they?
No, that was Prayers for Bobby. But Prayers for Bobby.
Okay.
Unfortunately, yes, same area. But unfortunately, Bobby's mom had not accepted him.
Right.
Before he killed himself. And I'm grateful that it took me 9 years to get out of that mindset. But then Noel and I had a good 12 years after that. But he trusted the wrong person. He opened his home, as I understand it, he opened his home to someone who had nowhere to go. And that proved to be his undoing.
Well, that was sad.
Thank you.
Talk about your organization. Now, it's been in around for, what, 2 years? I mean, 3 years almost?
Well, no, I did not start it until I was coming up on the 1 year anniversary. It started forming in my mind.
Okay.
And then actually, last year, we became a nonprofit corporation in the state of Texas. Mm-hmm. And there's an attorney who's taking us into 501c3 status.
Okay.
What I am doing on my day job, I travel around the country, so I remain in a non-homeless condition, which I think is a good place to be. And I'm contacting organizations, groups as I go across the country, because what I want to do is touch not only members of the gay community, but their parents who might still be stuck in the misery of organized religion, whatever the condemnations are that their parents are living in, and they're passing that on to their children. That's what I'm doing, all I can do to make a difference in.
So you're kind of coming from the parents' viewpoint and kind of the religious kind of, I don't want to say intolerance, but kind of, you know, just not accepting their children's sexuality.
I would certainly
and supporting
say,
them.
Yes, I would certainly say religious intolerance.
Yeah.
I was invited to speak at the at GAMIC, which is the oldest and largest gay activist alliance group in the state of New Jersey. I was in New Jersey for 4.5 months working. And when I spoke that night, it was wonderful because it was International Coming Out Day, as it turned out. And I had always thought it was Columbus Day, but it was International Coming Out Day, so I thought that was so healing on many levels. And a young man walked up to me after I had told my story, and he was crying. And he said, "Freddie, would you please talk to my mother?" He said, "She couldn't care less if I live or die." Okay, well, this young man is from India.
Mm. Oh, dear. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And so I know, and Noel's still here with me, and I said, "Okay, you've really got to help me with this one, because I know how to talk to an American mom."
Right.
Okay? Mm-hmm. Now we're going cross cultural boundaries here. And but I did. I spent a Sunday afternoon with her. And when we were through, and she reminded me of me because I heard all of my words coming at me. Well, this is just a stage he's going through. Well, what if he got married and then he would change? I mean, all the insane things that we think as parents, or at least that I thought of, that we just don't know any better.
Now, was she coming from the Christian position, or was she from Hindu?
Hindu.
Hindu.
And yeah. And so when we were through, and Pratik did not tell her who I was. He just said, "This is a friend of mine." Didn't tell her, didn't tell me that he hadn't prepared her at all for our conversation. I thanked him for that later. And so she didn't know me from Adam, and I knew what I was going to approach her about. So that was interesting when I found out when it was all over. But at the end, she was very grateful, and I saw her opening up, and her heart was opening up, and her mind was opening up. And she said, "Thank you so much. This is the very first time I have ever been able to speak with anyone openly about my son."
So how do you get through those parents that are so just closed off and so just not wanting to hear anything about that? How do you get through to them?
They are where I once was, through my experience.
Through your experience?
Through my experience. Yeah. If I had had someone like me to talk to instead of the only people I knew were people of like mind, people.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Religious.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If I had had someone like me to talk to, it wouldn't have taken me 9 years to come out of the insanity.
Well, it's if you're.
And I call it insanity.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
If you're always in the echo chamber, you keep hearing yourself over and over again through other people, you never hear anything else. How could you ever open your mind up? And I lived in that
that's
environment
good.
Before myself. Just a little sidebar here.
Uh-huh.
The Hindu faith prior to the British occupation of India, was very accepting and open to same-gender marriage, as well as total acceptance of gay and lesbian lifestyles. It was only after the British influence during their occupation of India that it changed. Their religion changed.
That is very interesting. I did not know that.
Yep. Just a little tidbit. Y'all are going to miss this sort of thing when I'm gone for a couple of months.
Now, Freddie, I was going to ask you a question. I have a theory that all moms know about their kids. Did you know about Noel before?
I knew that he was different.
Yeah.
I was also in a very strong denial state. And until he actually said something to me, it was fine for me to be in my denial. It was very healthy denial.
But you had a feeling that something was different.
I knew he was different than his twin brother. Yeah.
Oh, he's a twin. I didn't.
Yeah, identical twin.
Oh my gosh.
And the twin is straight or was?
Yes. Straight? Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that blows the theory, you know, that it's genetic. You know, because most twins are, you know, if one's gay, then probably the other one's gay too. But no.
Yeah. No. Errol is straight.
So okay, going back to your organization. How big is it? What kind of help from the community are you looking for? How can we get the listeners involved?
I will go, and Noel's telling me don't put it out there like that, but I'm going to. I will go anywhere at any time and talk to any group. Except I wouldn't go to Second Baptist. I might not be able to say that on here, but I just did.
Well, I mean, but you want to be effective in people that are open to your message, I think. And, you know,
I do.
So do you speak mostly to gay groups around the country and around the state?
No, I've also, when I came out of the evangelical Christianity sector, I did research on my own to find God, a loving God, not a punishing God, not a fearful God. And I've discovered Science of Mind, used to be called Church of Religious Science, but Science of Mind, all-inclusive, and there is no middleman. It's just God, you know, there is no middleman. So I have spoken at Science of Mind places.
So to wherever there are people who want to hear how children that want to talk to their parents or parents. I know PFLAG does excellent work as far as supporting their children and parents coming to PFLAG to find out exactly what you're talking about, to open their minds, to learn more.
Yes.
And so it's your crusade that you're on. How do people get in touch with you? If there was somebody that you got a Facebook site or Twitter.
Yes,
or
I do. You're good. Thank you. Yes, a friend just told me I have to get active on Twitter. Yes, I did start a website.
Well, they tell me that too, but you know.
Healing Out Loud. And it was healingoutloud.com, and the attorney who told me you have to change it to .org because you're going into 501c3 status. But Noel gave me the name, Healing Out Loud.
Yeah, I was going to ask, where did that come from?
I like that.
Thank you. Noel gave me the name. I was sitting in front of my computer one night, and this voice came to me, and Healing Out Loud. And okay, so I bought the domain name, put up the website, and I put it up as a bereaved mom. Since then, I have gotten focus. My heart's in the gay community. That's just all there is to it.
You're an unofficial gay.
I am.
We've adopted you, I think.
Good. Yay.
Friend and ally.
Yay.
Friend and
yes.
ally.
Yay,
well,
that,
we need as many straight allies.
We need lots of friends and allies.
Well, yeah. I'm here, and I have a big mouth. And
well, that's what we need.
So since then, I have developed a website. I am not a web person, okay? I am not a web person.
No, I was looking at it. It's good. It's good.
Thank you. Thank you. I need help. I need help on the website.
I want to go back to what you said. Now, okay. It is .com now, and it's going to be .org?
No, it is .org. I changed it.
Oh, you did.
It is
.org. So it is healingoutloud.org.
That is
okay.
correct.
Just wanted to clarify that.
That is correct. I still have the printed materials and the wristbands that we handed out at Pride last year, and at Pride Houston last year, and that I still have some of that left. So that says .com, and I knew that I wanted to move forward. I knew I had to move forward, and I was so naive. I had been to one, maybe two Houston Pride festivals prior to that, and the parade. And I actually called Half Price Books down there, and I said, okay, could I put up a little card table in front of your bookstore and hand out pamphlets? And they probably thought they had this Looney Tune on the phone. And they said, You know, you really need to contact the Pride.
There's like a whole organization.
There's more to it than just setting up your stay out.
Yeah. And so I had a booth at Pride last year, and I was going to do it this year, but wound up walking with the GAMIC people from New Jersey in the New York Pride Parade. It was just an incredible experience.
Oh, how cool is that?
2.5 million people lining the streets. It was just phenomenal. Anyway, so I did talk to the Pride people, and they told me what I need to do. I forgot what I was going to say.
But they told you you were going to put your table out in front of Half Price Books, and they
told me I couldn't do that. But see, then doors opened. I knew I had to talk to the Pride people. I didn't know about them before. Anyway, at the booth, we had some friends, and I had two boards put up. One of the board and little yellow stickies and a felt tip pen, which I have to get to the Gay Lesbian Archive Museum.
You can.
Mayor Parker told me that.
The mayor. Wow.
I got to meet her, and that's such a trip because they interviewed me on two news stations, and I had had the appointment with Mayor Parker prior to that, and she walked in the in her office, and she said, "I know you. I saw you on TV," and I thought, "No, this needs to be the other way around."
Right.
But she's just wonderful, and I gave her one of the wristbands. I gave her the wristband and the postcard that I had given you, Brian, And she put on the wristband, and she wore that into the city council meeting.
That's who she is.
I love her. Just love her. She is wonderful.
Okay, so what do you need from our listeners? What can they do? How can they get involved?
Yeah, what do you need from us?
What can we do for you?
Yeah.
How can we help you?
If I could be put in touch with different groups where I could talk and be given a voice. Yeah.
So now, do you have an email? Can they contact you through the website?
Yes.
So what they need to do is healingoutloud.org. Go there, send you a message, say, "Hey, we want you to come talk to
us." Yes, and there's also a group on Facebook. A friend of mine said, "Freddie, you have to put the group on Facebook."
Oh, absolutely.
So, but then Facebook changed something, and now people have to ask me if they can join. Before, people could just join.
Oh, that was something. Yeah. They liked your site, or now it's a setup for you personally.
Give us your email so we can have people email you directly.
It's Freddie, F-R-E-D-D-I, at healingoutloud.org.
We have been talking to Freddie Jensen of Healing Out Loud, who's becoming quite a voice in our community. So please reach out and touch. A healing voice. Get in touch with her so she can come and spread her message if you haven't heard her before. Anything else you want our listeners to hear or know?
I want them to know that I am here to be of service to them.
That says
it all right there.
Very much, very good. Thank you, Freddie. And this is Queer Voices.
As one of the newscasters for This Way Out's news wrap, my voice may be familiar to you. But what you may not know is that there are a great many reasons I strongly support the important work that This Way Out does and the important resource that it provides around the world. And only with your help, too, does this good work continue. Please log on to www.thiswayout.org to read my special message to you. Thanks.
Eugene Clark,
Carol Fleisig,
Wesley Mercer,
co-pilot David Charlebois,
Luke A. Duda,
Graham Berkeley,
Michael Lepore,
Pamela J. Boyce,
Tony Carnes,
Ronald Gamboa, Dan Brandhorst, and their son David,
Seamus O'Neill,
Joe Ferguson,
Catherine Smith.
You're hearing the names of some of the gay, lesbian, bi, and trans people known to have perished in the terrorist attacks in the U.S. on September 11, 2001. They were office workers and executives, a flight attendant and co-pilot, a gay couple, and their newly adopted 3-year-old son. They were of various ethnicities and genders, and they were not all U.S. citizens. The names of other LGBT people who died that day are not known, like the many closeted police officers and firefighters whose isolated partners grieved in silence. There are a couple of names that have become widely known, One is Father Michael Judge, the Catholic chaplain to the New York Fire Department, the openly gay Franciscan friar, who's been called the first victim of the World Trade Center attack, was killed ministering to firefighters. The photo of his body being recovered is one of the iconic images of the day. Another famed gay hero of 9/11 is United Flight 93 passenger Mark Bingham. The documentary With You explores Bingham's life and his relationship with his mother, Alice Hoagland, a former United Airlines flight attendant. This Way Out, Steve Pride sat down with Hoagland to hear more of her story firsthand.
Mark Bingham was born to Alice Hoagland on May 22, 1970, and died at 10.03 a.m. on September 11, 2001, when with a few other passengers, he stormed the cockpit of United Flight 93 and fought to prevent members of Al-Qaeda from using the plane to kill hundreds, maybe thousands, of additional victims. Instead, the plane crashed into a field near Shanksville, Pennsylvania. Mark was 6 feet four and 225 pounds. He was a lifelong rugby star. In college, he was president of his fraternity. And, oh yeah, he was gay. But Mark Bingham was not a gay hero. He's an American hero. And With You, a documentary about this special man, is winning awards and hearts at film festivals around the country.
I'm Alice Hoagland. I'm the mother of Mark Bingham.
Mark was incredibly protective of you. One of the phrases repeated over and over in the documentary is, "Don't tell my mom."
Oh, yeah. Well, that's kind of the way it was. I learned a lot about Mark after he was killed, and I learned things like months and years later. His rugby coach in high school, "I didn't mean to let the cat out of the bag," Dan said when he told me there wasn't really true that his big thigh cut did not really come from a Fijian farmer. It came from a plate glass door that was charged through by Mark on the way to trying to get away from the police down there. And the time that Mark actually tackled the Stanford tree, which is the mascot for Stanford University, I didn't hear about that until after Mark was bailed out of jail by my brother Vaughn, Mark's uncle. The Stanford tree had been taken out by an angry and irate and slightly overwrought Cal guy named Mark Bingham. As I understand it, the fingerprints that were generated when Mark was arrested for taking out the Stanford tree were the ones that were used to identify him at the crash site. In a crash like that, the human body acts very much like a large, soft envelope, and the things that are left are feet and hands. And I imagine that that's what was left of Mark when they shipped him back in a beautiful casket in the aftermath of 9/11.
What's the significance of the film's title, With You?
With You is what I used to hear all the time when I stood on the sidelines. It's a common phrase that the rugby players use to orient and to let their fellow teammate who is holding the ball and running with the ball, let them know where you are so that they can throw the ball to you in a lateral pass if they need to. I'm with you, I'm with you. And this is what Mark used to say as he and his buddies were advancing the ball down the field. It's a very common phrase among ruggers.
On September 11th, 2001, you were visiting your brother.
6:44 in the morning, the phone rang, and we were all dead asleep out in Saratoga, you know, a continent away from New York. And I heard Carol Phipps, a family friend, answer it, and I heard her pad past the room where I was sleeping, and I heard her knock on Vaughn and Kathy's door, and I heard Kathy get out of bed and run to the phone, and I heard Kathy say, "We love you too, Mark. Let me get your mom." And she saw me standing in the hallway, and she said, "Alice, come talk to Mark. He's been hijacked." And boy, I was trying hard to get my head around that one. Came and listened. I heard Mark's voice. He said, "Mom, this is Mark Bingham." And
He often said, this is Mark Bingham, when he was talking to business associates on the phone, but he didn't usually say that to me. And I could tell that he was trying to be very focused and composed and businesslike, so he let that slip out. Mom, this is Mark Bingham. I just want to tell you that I love you. I'm on a flight from Newark to San Francisco, and there are three guys on board who have taken over the plane, and they say they have a bomb. You believe me, don't you, Mom? And I said, yes, Mark, I believe you. Who are those guys? And then he was sort of distracted, and I heard the voices of the guys he was making this big plan of revolt with. They were talking. They were already making their plan.
This is Steve Pride. I'm talking to Alice Hoagland about her son, Mark Bingham, who was aboard United Airlines Flight 93 on September 11th, 2001. Alice, tell me about listening to the tape.
The cockpit voice recording was really an eerie and ghastly experience in a way, and yet it was very cathartic and important that we heard it. We were invited by the FBI to come to Princeton, New Jersey to listen to it, and a bunch of Flight 93 family members sat together with headsets on and an overhead screen with translations of the Arabic that was being spoken. And it's a 31-minute tape that runs in a continuous loop, so if it gets to be 31 minutes, and it starts erasing again. So the actual takeover of the airplane by the terrorists, Siad Jarrah and his three thug buddies, was actually erased by the time, because the plane crashed 31 minutes plus after the time of the takeover. Fortunately, the takeover was actually caught because we think that Leroy Homer, the first officer, keyed his mic open, and the words that were spoken by Captain Dahl, "Get out of here, get out of here," came down and were heard by the fellows ground control in Cleveland. So we do have a pretty good audio record of the takeover right up through the crash. The first 20 minutes or so of the cockpit voice recording are pretty dreary. I can remember hearing such sounds as a flight attendant working just outside the cockpit door. Sometimes you hear phrases coming out of the very automated system there, and I can remember the sound of the autopilot kicking in and out. It was unusual for it to go in and out like that, but I realized that the terrorist pilot, quote-unquote, Siad Jarrah, did not know how to turn off the autopilot, so he kept it on. He was fighting with it, and he had dropped the altitude of the plane so low, it's supposed to be flying 30,000 feet when it's going 600 miles an hour, but he was going 600 miles an hour at about 2,000 feet, and then 1,500 feet, and then 1,000 feet. People in Pittsburgh remember the sight of a great big 757 out of control, whipping its wings back and forth and flying low over their city, and it crashed a few minutes later, 90 miles south in Shanksville. And what we heard as family members was the sound that was picked up by three microphones, two in the headsets of the pilots and one mounted on the aft bulkhead. And even though it was technically flawed and barely audible, it was still just enough to turn you white. We could hear the sound of people mounting a revolt in the back, and we could hear the lead terrorist asking his buddy, "Are they fighting? Are they fighting in the back?" It was heartening to hear how frightened those terrorists were when they realized that their plan, their ugly plan, years in the making, was going to fail because three or four or five or six guys in the back decided that they were going to put up some resistance. They took a vote, and they grabbed what weapons they could, and they ran forward. And I can just visualize Mark with his long legs running over those seats and his buddies running up the aisles on foot. This was my workplace, and now it was a battleground where my son and his good friends there, his pickup buddies, also athletes. A football quarterback, another rugby player, a basketball star from Mark's very alma mater, Los Gatos High School, and Mark Bingham and whoever else, Alan Bevan, Richard Guadagno, wonderful people on board that flight, all of them athletic. They ran forward, and you could hear the sound of it as the cockpit voice recording picked up. Now we didn't hear Arabic voices so much. Now we heard English spoken in American accent by a bunch of very motivated guys, and it was, get him, in the cockpit. If we don't get in there, we'll die. And Dina Burnett tells me that that was the sound of her husband, Tom. And then the other guys picked it up. It reminded me so much of a rugby match. And the other guys picked up. I could hear Mark yelling, in the cockpit. And Alan Bevan, perhaps, and Todd, and Jeremy, and Tom, all of them chanting like that, encouraging one another. And you could hear the sounds of blows being struck. And you could hear the sound of the two terrorists being dispatched. It was a very vigorous time. They fought as best they could. I wish I'd had another minute when Mark called me before we were cut off, and I could have told him, Mark, there is a cockpit key just a few feet away from the cockpit door. You get in there, you turn it, it's easy, it's a flimsy door, it pulls out into the cabin, and you can get in there easily. But they didn't know that. And they apparently, according to the FBI, they used the liquor cart from the forward galley as a battering ram against the cockpit door, and you could hear the crockery, the glass and plates pitching back and forth in that galley. And it was an onslaught that went on for a good 7, 8, 10 minutes. And Ziad Jarrah finally realized that he was going to have to stop them by doing what he did. And an eyewitness on the ground says that he saw this enormous plane rise straight up and come up over the horizon and tip upside down and plunge straight down into the ground. The FBI tells us that the cockpit probably sheared off. They found some remains in the burning hemlock trees. But when the paramedics and the other emergency equipment arrived, as best they can, a few minutes later out there in Shanksville, way out in a remote area, they couldn't find any evidence of the airplane. They saw pieces of paper floating around, and it took some digging to find the remains of the airplane. It had buried itself so thoroughly and so fast in the loamy soil out there in southwest Pennsylvania that there was nothing left of it. They had to dig it out, and they found the cockpit voice recorder and the flight data recorder. And I was so gratified on the late afternoon of September 11th to get verification from the FBI of what I'd been telling people, that it was a studly group of passengers that got together and mounted a revolt. It was not a coincidence or an accident that the plane came down short of the terrorist target of the Capitol Dome in Washington.
Watching the home movies of Mark in the documentary, It's pretty clear that he would have been impervious to my gaydar. So when he was younger, did you ever have any suspicions about his sexuality?
I was dumbfounded when he came out to me on August 27th, 1991. I was just astounded. I did not receive the news very well. Mark really set me on a spiritual journey, and he has taught me how to live my life, and he has taught me how important it is to be open to people who are not like me. And fortunately, Mark had the grace to be patient with me, and I'm so grateful that he had enough love for both of us for a while. And I did come around, and I began to realize, hey, I need to revise my attitudes, and I need to speak out against this stereotyping that the gay community is receiving. I think that everyone should be fully enfranchised with the mainstream and should be proud of their sexuality and marry whom they love.
This has been a conversation with Mark Bingham's mom, Alice Hoagland. The documentary is called With You. I'm Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Even though he could not marry or teach your children in our schools, because who he wants to love breaking your God's rules. He stood up on a Tuesday morning. In the terror he was brave, and he made his choice, and without a doubt 100 lives he must have saved. Hear the bell now as it tolls. Wake up, America. It's Tuesday morning. Come on, let's roll.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Rick Watts, John Beaupre, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Bonnie Tyler and Melissa Etheridge performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Thanks to the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and our generous listener supporters for making This Way Out possible. To find out how you can participate, log on to thiswayout.org, where you can check out our blog and listen to our podcasts. Subscribe to This Way Out on iTunes, like This Way Out on Facebook, follow TWO Radio on Twitter, email TWORadio@AOL.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on CITR Vancouver, British Columbia, 2MTM Kunambo, New South Wales, WTND Macomb, Illinois, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Everybody stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
Well, Brian, who is our guest tonight?
Well, we started off the show with yourself.
Well, you saved me for last.
Well, we started, and then who do we have?
Aubrey from Gamma Rho Lambda at the University of Houston.
And then in the second hour, I don't know because I was not on the interview. But the last was...
That was just Summer.
Summer?
Who was your guest, Summer?
My guests were Michael Moore and Mark Levin of Cachette Houston.
And then finally we had Freddie Jensen of Healing Out Loud.
And at the top of the show, we told you we would be hearing from Wayne Beeson of Truth Wins Out. And unfortunately, we were not able to make that work for you tonight. But I want to encourage everyone to attend presentation he's giving on Wednesday night at Resurrection MCC, 2025 West 11th Street. Ex-Gay Ministries, an overview. Wayne, as I said, is the founder of Truth Wins Out. He's also the person behind the investigative journalism that revealed so-called reparative therapy at Michelle Bachman husband's clinic. So please do try to attend that.
Yeah. I want to thank everybody again for these last 6 years of wonder and joy. I'll be gone for a few months till after the election. And
the runoff election.
Yes, officially tomorrow I will be a candidate on the ballot for Houston City Council at large position 2. And this is Queer Voices.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 9 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles, and J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage, which is produced in Houston. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Falinski. On-air voices are Brian Levinka, Jennifer Renee, J.D. Doyle, Glenn Holt, Summer Iman, and Jack Valensky. For more information about tonight's program, including links to websites and organizations mentioned during the show, visit queervoices.org. And you can send email to jack@queervoices.org. Be sure to listen to KPFT every Sunday morning starting at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston, a Pacifica Foundation station. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
Feel more peace and happiness in your relationships and enhance your ability to communicate with others? Would you like a deeper awareness and acceptance of your feelings and needs, all of them. If you are curious about these possibilities, join us on September 15th from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Dominican Center, 6501 Almeida, for a free 3-hour introduction to a process known as compassionate communication, or also known as nonviolent communication. This free 3-hour introduction will be followed by a 3-day training and facilitated by Raj Gill, the founder of the Freedom Project Canada. For more information, visit www.houstonnvc.org or phone Susan at 281-412-4564. Please join us.
We've all played that game. What's the CD that you'd take with you to a desert island if you only had one choice? Maybe it would be something by... Or maybe it would be a disc from...
Mr. DJ, can't you please play a real country song?
Well, let's play that game now, but with a twist. What radio station would you take to a desert island if you only had one choice? There's only one answer to that question. It's KPFT, of course. We bring you great music, news, and information each day. You depend on us to keep you up to date. And radio that's worth listening to is radio that's worth supporting. 90% of our funding comes from people just like you. Without you, KPFT would be gone. So visit our website today, kpft.org, to become a member. You are listening to Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston.